Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No. Take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No. Take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I am just pulling up to the Harold Pinter Theatre in central London to interview Zoe Ashton, who is a friend of mine. She's wicked, an incredible actor. She's currently doing a play called Betrayal with Tom Hiddleston and Charlie Cox. So we thought we'd go and join her before she went on stage and ask her a few questions about mental health and life and existence and the whole truth. So, welcome to the Whole Truth Podcast. I'm with Zoe Ashton. Is it Zoe?
Zoe.
Yeah, I thought it was Zoe.
Yeah, Zoe, I like...
Even though I've said your name to you loads of times, because I have never said it in the context of a podcast, I suddenly was like, totally freaked out.
I know, it makes you self-conscious, the microphone.
A little bit.
You said it perfectly.
Thank you.
And I like a little sort of... Subtles, like leaning on the A a bit, the Zah.
Zah.
A little bit of a Zah.
Zah.
Zah. It's when people say Zor.
Zor, yeah.
And I'm like, have you seen Thor? Because there's an O and an R, and I don't know where you're getting that from.
Yeah.
That's when it's worrying.
True.
And I've also had a Barry before over the phone.
So someone called you Barry?
Yeah, they were like, oh, sorry, is it Barry? I was like slightly thinking, do you need to go and have vocal surgery?
I also do have an unfortunate habit of assigning names to people. I mean, I haven't done this with you.
Yeah.
Assigning names to people before meeting them based on I absolutely have no idea what.
That's
and then
hysterical.
If it's been long enough and then I'm introduced to them, I find it really difficult to get rid of the old name. I know.
What kind of names? Like,
well, like I was once introduced to a friend's boyfriend. I'd like seen him, but I'd seen him enough. When I say long enough, I mean like 15 minutes, like 20 minutes. Sometimes it can be days or weeks. But I've seen him in the context of her, and I was like, oh, he looked like a... I can't remember his name now.
Like a normal name, like a Michael.
He looked like I thought he looked like an Isaac. I thought his name was Isaac. So like, I was like, oh, he's called Isaac, and then they were like, no, his name's Tristan. So I was like, okay, cool. So I was confused between the two, but so much to the point as I saw him like 4 months after, and I was like, oh, hello. And he was like, yeah, what's going on? I was like, you know what's so funny? I used to call you Tristan. And he was like, no, my name is Tristan. And I was like, oh, you're not Isaac.
Yeah, do you know, wild. That might be a thing. You might want to look into it. You know, like there's people who...
Please, help me find my community.
Well, I'm sure there's a forum. You know, there's people who like think of things and they taste it. That's a bad one to have.
You can always do that, no?
No.
What, like Coca-Cola or...?
No. If you think of Coca-Cola, you can taste it in your mouth?
Yeah.
What the actual...
What do you mean? I'm confused now.
But like, you don't think of like dog shit and...
I haven't eaten dog
taste
shit.
Taste the dog shit. But there are people who haven't and can taste it.
See, that's not...
Or they smell things and they can see... There's like... weird things like that, and I think maybe the name thing could be that when you see a name.
Cocoa butter.
I can't taste.
No. That I learned that the hard way. I'm just saying. Two things I like. So, thank you for agreeing to come and hold truth.
My pleasure.
Did you know what you were agreeing to?
Well, I like Brilliant. You. I like you. And I was like, I'm sure it will be fine.
Yay. No, I like that. It is fine. It's our, yeah, it's a podcast based around just conversations about mental health.
Yeah. But that I did know.
Yeah. And it's, but I mean, that I believe that the charm is that I'm not too regimented. I'm actually listening.
You're in flow.
So I'm going to start off by asking you a very open-ended question, which I think is a trend amongst mental health podcasts, which is, how are you?
How am I? Do you know what? It's the first line in the play that I'm doing at the moment.
Really?
Yeah. You know, it's one of the hardest things to act, actually asking, how are you?
Despite everyone acting it every day.
And that's when you realise, oh, I can't remember the last time I asked this and actually cared about the answer. Do you know what I mean? Because it's, to ask it, to really ask it, is so hard.
Yeah.
I still don't think I've nailed it. We're 3 weeks into the show. How are you? How am I? I'm really well. I can safely say I'm in a very, very good place in my life.
That's nice.
And I am, obviously I wait for the other shoe to drop as soon as I say that, because I just have that anxiety around ever saying things are okay.
Also, as an actor, I'd say that's quite understandable.
Yeah, we just have that innate feeling that if things are good 1 second, they must be about to be really rocky or like really hard, because that's the balance that we tread all the time, right? But things are great. I'm really happy. I'm happy at work.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Is it nice doing a play?
When it's good, it's really good. Because it is, as you say, almost like a prayer or a meditation. You know, you're here every night. As, again, you know, the live experience is, it's just something else.
Yeah.
When you hear a crowd, when you know that you're going to be instantly in dialogue with a whole group of strangers rather than
of course
making something and then waiting a year for it to come out and then have a very different idea about the whole project. You know, you are live and you are in it, and each night is so, so different. It's an incredible play that I'm doing with two incredible people, Tom Hiddleston and Charlie Cox, and our fourth brilliant actor, Eddie Arnold, who plays the waiter, which actually is a very, it's a small role, but it's a pivotal role.
Right.
When theatre is bad, and I have done theatre that was challenging, not material-wise, because the material we're doing now is challenging, but in a good way, if you're with bad people or people who aren't great for your soul and you have to go into that meditation every night, I have been rocked to my core, actually, by plays like that.
Really?
My mental health has been in not a very good place at all when theatre's been going bad.
It's interesting you talk about that, because I think those it's quite applicable really to anything in terms of understanding the energy of your environment.
Yeah.
Picking up on general morale.
Yeah.
You know what? I think something interesting that you touched on there is feeling seen and heard. You are actively seen very much.
Very much.
Which is something that is the price you can often have kind of taken from you, like not even consciously, not in like a mean way, just from school or maybe your parents are busy or whatever.
Yeah, funny enough, school, as you were talking, school is something that came into my mind, because, you know, I'm thinking of a very specific time when I was having a really bad time on a play, and what you realise is you have to go in every day like school and be with those people, the same people every day, even though you're feeling vulnerable, even though you might be beefing with them, even though they might be being not very nice to you, which is what my experience was.
It's like the playground, isn't it?
And you have to just, like, you'll be walking towards your place of work being like, right, okay, saying the same things to yourself that you said potentially when you were having a bad time at school one time. Do you know what I mean? Like, right, you can do this, just get through the day. Like, soon it's going to be lunch, and then after lunch you only have a few hours left or whatever. It's just awful. And in filming, you just realise there are so many other spaces to hide. You can go and lock yourself in your trailer. It's a more insular, individualistic world, if you want it to be.
Totally.
But theatre is just playground 24 hours.
How did you deal with that? Did you genuinely just struggle? Did you have to ask for help? Did you have a particular practice?
I departed so truly from my senses that over Sunday lunch one day with my mum and dad, I said, guys, they were like, yeah, what's up? I was like, okay, so I've been thinking about this. And they were like, sensing the tone had sort of shifted around the table. I was like, I've been thinking about all the ways I can get out of the play. Wow. And maybe what you could do is stage a kidnapping.
No.
At stage door. And I think I was only half joking.
Yeah. There was like some real truth in that, like, save me.
Save me. Just come and get me and just take me out of this environment. I'd been so blindsided by it that I hadn't prepared myself, and I didn't necessarily go to the healthiest things to help me through. Mm. I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping.
Really?
It was really bad. As an actor, you realise when you have little bumps like that, as you know, you go, right, next time I'm going to find a process or a ritual that's going to get me in and out of this in a healthier way.
And did you find anything that worked for you from that point? How did you deal with the recovery of it?
I didn't deal very well. I had a holiday, which was brilliant, but quite honestly, it was one of those times where I couldn't leave it on stage or at work. My whole personal life was really crumbling as well. And it's just, it's one of those things. And look, what doesn't kill you always makes you stronger. You're never given more than you can handle. But I think it's just making better choices, really. Listening to my body is one of the things that I'm just sitting in such a great place with it at the moment.
That's good. That's tough, that.
It's really
tough. But once you put your money on it, for want of a better phrase.
That's a great phrase, actually. Putting your money on yourself. What did someone say to me recently? Sometimes you just have to bet on yourself.
Yeah, because it's like your intuition, I think. We're often clouded by our senses of right. And obviously there are ideas of right and wrong, but societal expectation, morality, because sometimes our authentic feelings, I think, are in contrast with what we're taught to do.
100%.
Do you know what I mean?
All vibes. You are so talking to my heart right now. like you're literally talking to where I'm at right now.
And it's like having the kind of like determination or the confidence to honour that feeling in the moment and then be willing to accept what comes afterwards, you know?
I've been doing a lot of reading around hypersensitivity, which I'm self-diagnosing myself with currently. I'm looking to get more of an official diagnosis. Sense. Yeah, but it's not something I'd ever thought about before in relation to myself.
Right.
And that thing of transference, you know, like I've always thought people were very sensitive or overly sensitive.
Yeah.
And what I was actually doing is looking for that inside myself looking to understand that in myself.
Yeah.
Because hypersensitive people, just on a very basic level, just are sorting life into so many more different categories than other people.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you're exhausted and you don't know why.
Yeah.
Or like you're saying,
you have
unresolved feelings of anger or, you know, anxiety or depression and you don't know why.
Oh, it's like compassion exhaustion or something. My friend was talking about a kind of similar thing with like doctors and nurses and stuff. Yeah, where it's like there's a point at which they have to make kind of decisions around the amount of energy they're actually able to give.
Because
you are exhausted. It's not, that's not conceptual.
I feel like Whoopi Goldberg can go sometimes. Yeah, when she's just like, get out.
Yeah.
You know, just all these people just get out of my like brain or out of my consciousness, because I'm just like run ragged. But on when you mentioned that therapist or that notion of the two selves, you know, that the self that needs to be selfish and the authentic self. Doing this play, I came across an amazing couples therapist called Esther Perel.
Yeah, I know her. She's dope.
She is so. Brilliant.
Yeah, she's real.
And I realize what a blessed position when you're an actor. Sometimes you're just like, oh, I'm just going to Google research about a role. And then you're like, oh, this has fixed my whole life.
Oh,
awesome.
I know. I get that now. In the context of this play.
Yeah.
Oh, right. That's funny.
And she talks about, there's this whole talk that she did on the selfish self and the dutiful self.
Yeah, yeah, because she's talking about watching marriages continuously break down because no one's having open conversations.
No one's having open conversations. Yeah. No one's being truthful to themselves about what it's like to be intimate with another person because you can only stand as close to someone else as you can stand to yourself. It's packaged so badly when you're a kid, like, love yourself and you'll be able to love others. And you're like, I feel like that's a greetings card. And I'm not getting any, you know, I'm not getting any more calorific content from this.
So there's a couple of interesting things in your dressing room. You have a couple of David Strigleys, who's one of my...
He's not David Strigley. He is similar.
Oh, shit.
Babak Ganji. Do you know, I got
is
this
it before or after?
This is...
Hold on.
This is Babak. This is my friend Babak.
Oh,
getting some serious pluggage, but it is so Strigley.
Yeah, it
Isn't
is.
It great?
It's almost exactly the same.
It's almost exactly the same, but he's got, like, I don't know, his little observations.
I like that as a statement.
Art is the thing nobody asked you to do. I have to remember that. He also has another one which gives me some surreal sort of plugging into, you know, the insignificance truly of. You know, myself in the world, which is good to think about sometimes.
Oh, that's nice.
But that, and he's got another one that says, somewhere else right now, Britney Spears is doing something.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just a leveler. If you think about it, if you think about the world like that.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. I just hope she's all right.
I hope she's all right.
You also have a postcard of Childish Gambino.
I do, my Donald. It was a first night card from someone I'm very close to, and I think they understand on a very deep level how sometimes I can, especially when I think when you're in the theatre, you can suddenly disconnect from all the things that actually make you you, because suddenly you think you have to become theatre you and surround yourself with, like, theatre-y things, which actually maybe you don't connect to,
like,
on a very deep level. Scarves are one.
A lot of scarves.
I don't have any scarves in this room. You know, glasses.
I think a lot of people who go to the theatre wear scarves, right? You know, it's like thin...
Yes, to protect the instrument.
Just to
flick in people's faces in the box office queue. So rude. He's there staring at me in his brilliant Hawaiian shirt because he is someone who just embodies, you know, what I find attractive in artists, which is creativity, soul,
freedom,
unapologetic vibrations, but also very successful vibrations, and the two can exist and coexist. And he's a great icon for that, I feel. But funnily enough, on the music side, we're a very music centric cast actually, and I always make a playlist for a character every time I'm doing, even
amazing.
If it's two lines. I have the capacity to listen to one song over and over and over again. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Does that make me a psychopath? Or?
No, I don't think so. I'm not sure psychopaths that bother about music.
Really?
Well, they're interested maybe in signing artists.
Sure. They're very much on the other side of the table. Gotcha. The play was written in the 70s, so I've suddenly been very pulled to a lot of sounds from the 70s, but then also... Again, just like music that makes you feel connected and confrontational and very different in contrast to the play rather than in tune with it.
Have there been, aside of acting, have there been any albums or songs that are reminiscent of a particular time, good or bad, that, you know, maybe you can't listen to anymore, maybe you do listen to try and rein yourself in?
Rein myself in. I feel any song by the Smiths is equally hard and easy to listen to just because it takes me all the way back to Manchester in my time as a student.
Mm.
It was one of the times that I remember feeling so unbelievably free and so switched on and so creative. I can remember nearly every day of my studentdom. I mean, that was an exaggeration, wasn't it? Massive exaggeration on my part.
I just lied. Yeah, you could lie,
but
just generally, though. You can carry on doing that lie.
Carry on. I can remember everything to such a point where I can remember random people that I met, or
really?
Like random people I bumped to in...
Like Dave.
Tesco or whoever. Dave? I don't remember Dave.
Don't you? There was no Daves in your uni.
We didn't have any Daves, honestly.
Well, now everyone knows you're lying, so
no,
you're going to have to move on.
No, honestly, we didn't have any Daves.
It's just not possible.
But that is, you know, that nostalgia sense. You can either love it or it can feel painful.
Yeah, or
painful.
It can be tough, yeah.
It can feel really painful.
There was a period of time where I couldn't listen to Tame Impala. I have songs to, like, rein me in.
Yes.
So there's a point where, like, if everything's getting a bit much,
yeah,
you're like, yo, I just need to do something. Like, if you're going, like, to clean the house or, like, to try and reorientate yourself, there's got to be a go-to.
I think Ella Fitzgerald is a good reiner inner.
Yeah, brilliant.
Because there's a touch of pain in the voice, but she is also one of just the most uplifting voices ever committed to record, in my opinion.
Yeah, because mine, Leanne Havas.
One of the best voices of our generation.
Yo, my girl, Leo. Like, too much. She's having a bit of a day, it's just that bum 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 at the start of What You Don't Do. Bum 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 bum. Little words and everything but the truth. And it's like, it's not sweet. It's like literally I can be in that kind of like moment. I can be like, it'll probably be about 30 to 35 minutes into like a rom-com. You know, there's normally like a point where the main character's kind of made a decision and everything seems great before it like inevitably goes really, really awful and everyone hates each other. Yeah. That's what I feel like when I listen to Leanne Havas at home alone.
Let's just think about Leanne for a second. Yeah. I mean, let's just let that sit. She's just so fabulous. I don't know why she's actually not got more props for the specialness of her voice.
Yeah, because she's taken so long to make her next album, but she's going to do it. She is doing it. I've seen her Instagram.
Must be true. I see a whole lot of bunnies and they want the covers. I might watch it.
Gotta watch my life at all costs. So fuck it, shit's amazing. Treating life. Was there ever a point where you became aware of like, of like nurturing your mental health?
Good question.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So I do think that, the more I ask that question or the more I think about it, I mean, you've already stated different periods of well-being, you know, like a difficult job being a low point, a uni being a high point, school being a low point.
I think when I was 12, I think I had a bit of a nervous breakdown.
Really?
Yeah, because of bullying and a load of stuff that was going on at school.
What were you getting bullied about?
I was on TV and that wasn't great.
At 12?
Too visible. Yeah, I started when I was 6.
Wait, what?
Hello, goodbye.
Should I know that?
No.
What show?
I was in a show at that point called The Demon Headmaster.
What?
I know, knowledge.
Are you taking a piss?
It's pre-internet, this is why. I am so pre-internet.
Wait,
no one actually knows.
That dude scared the fucking shit out of me, y'all. That dude, that bald guy with glasses.
He wasn't bald, but yeah, he was grey.
He wasn't bald. Oh, right.
So I don't want to mess with your childhood memories, but yeah.
Dude, that guy freaked me out. Did his eyes go into fire sometimes?
His eyes went into like a spinning.
Oh, spinning.
That would hypnotise. Yeah. Yeah. I was in the second series.
You sure that isn't what traumatised you?
It very much could be. I mean, yeah, I was on children's TV at the point where I was a year 7 student.
Oh,
and that
my
was a level of visibility
God.
I did not need.
No, that's not nice.
It wasn't good.
What was your character like? Was that, were people finding it difficult to detach you from your character?
No, I don't think it was that. I just think it was, none of us want to be seen as being different in any way, shape or form. Anyone who is different, and we can see that they're different, and everyone knows that we know that they're different, and they know that they know that we know that she's different.
Exactly.
Let's kill her. And I say that half jokingly, but it was tough.
No, did you get really physically attacked?
I always managed to joke my way out of being physically beaten. Yeah, I hear you. I don't know how that happened.
It's just that's one of the upsides of being a performer, I think.
But which came first? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know.
Like, because you're like, well, I know that there's well, acting, they call but it a this defense is like next level. It? Yeah. So I managed to escape a very. I talk about it in my upcoming book again, not plugging, but revisiting that time in my life through writing. Was the moment that I realised how bad it was.
Yeah.
And this is years later. Yeah. There was a note that went round class one day. You know those days that are very quiet and you're like, something's up.
Not in my head.
No. Yeah, no, here it's always very much.
Oh my God, what, in school?
Yeah.
Yes, I do know that.
And you're like, huh, everyone's being super nice to me.
Oh no.
What's happening? Girls that didn't like me yesterday, the show was on last night. Now they're being really nice to me. I want to trust this, but how far do I go? Anyway, and at the end of that day, a note that had been passed around class was intercepted by... a teacher, they basically wanted to disfigure me at the end of school.
That is so horrible.
Not great.
That makes me so sad. And what's frustrating is that guaranteed the person who started that note would have felt a similar level of disempowering or
totally.
You know what I mean, in their home life or from their sibling.
Totally.
It's the worst, man.
It's the worst. But I remember quite clearly thinking at that time, not only am I worried about myself, but I feel my parents are a bit worried about me. So that level of awareness was new. So I think probably about age 12.
I'm sorry you went through that.
Thanks, babe. Look, you're so right. That there is more knowledge to be had as a young person that people at school who are popular, especially by means of like violence or, you know, putting other people down, are eventually going to get hit in the face by the issues that they are facing, and the ones who are bullied suddenly will become more attuned with all the things that make them great. But it's so true, the things that you have to work for and develop in yourself at a formative time can only serve
you. You are right, though, because that is true on a personality level. I do hear that we have a society that is so... And they're getting worse,
awful.
But so based around a specific notion of beauty,
awful.
That those people, I even feel sorry for those who'd fall into that.
Yeah.
Because if you do fall into what we consider to be beautiful, and then you just have this, just things just happening for you.
Yeah.
You, like you say, you like, what do you...
Making the effort.
Yeah. You get to a place where you're just like, just looking around, just going, just looking at things. Yeah, I'm not sure what I like. I don't know what I do.
No.
I just, you know, I'm just used to people offering me things.
And you can't reach intimacy that way. I'm so obsessed these days, as I think more about, you know, my place in the world, my mental health, my body, whatever it might be. I'm so much more aware of these huge words that, again, because of the social media element of our lives or the individualistic nature of our lives, you don't end up thinking as much about, or the words that you don't use as much, like intimacy.
Yeah.
Intimacy is a massive word.
Love that word.
And it is full of so many things. If you are someone, as you say, who's getting everything handed to them, okay, that's brilliant in one respect, I'm sure. But to truly be intimate with another person is going to be more difficult. Because you're not actually open. You are living in an idea.
Yeah.
And if you're living in an idea, you can't get close to other people. You just can't. And then it's like, you know.
Well, this would be a perfect opportunity for you to... And by the way, can I say, I think you're incredibly beautiful.
Thank you.
I would like you to know that. And that's good. And you can feel that. I think that's the important thing, is it's not just memories of people... Rejecting you.
Rejecting
children. No.
Constantly.
I won't go back there.
Let's not go backwards. But you know, that's also, it's worth saying that I feel that was also very much attached to my race, actually, at one point.
Of course.
It was so...
Where did you go to school?
I went to... my first school that I went to was a predominantly black and Asian school in North London. And then I ended up going northwest to another school that was a predominantly white school.
Northwest? Whereabouts?
Sort of Parliament Hill.
Oh.
Like...
You went over Harlesden area.
Is that NW?
Parliament Hill is...
Like Hampstead Heath? Is that NW?
Just about.
Just about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is it otherwise?
No, it is. You're right.
NW.
Yeah. There actually isn't an... Anyway.
What?
No, no, you're right.
Is it? I don't know.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah. I just always remember in London there's no northeast. It's very confusing.
Ah, yes, you're so right. There's no northeast.
Yeah.
My brain has just exploded. I can't go on tonight. Someone phone my understudy. I can't go on stage. This is too much brain matter that is leaking out of my ears. Okay. That's mad. There's no northeast.
I don't know why. I honestly don't know why.
Okay, I'm just going to park that for a second because I feel quite dizzy. I feel quite vulnerable, quite dizzy right now.
Your race in
yeah. So I went from a predominantly black school where the young women at that school had a shared knowledge about what made them feel beautiful, or like how they did their hair, how they wanted to apply lip gloss, and not that that's what beauty means, but you know when you're at that age and you're experimenting subjective. With your own persona and your own what's the word?
Identity.
Or had a notion of, you know, the men that they wanted to be fancied by and wanted to fancy. Yeah. And I say men because, you know, obviously we were at a girls' school at the time and obviously everyone back then was straight, right?
Yeah.
Everyone was certainly acting it. And then so it was sort of slightly different than when I went to an all-white school and you were predominantly white school, and suddenly it was like you felt slightly, how can I phrase this? Kind of like second to be picked.
Right.
In the beauty sakes.
Mm. Yeah, it's tough. The intersection of it is ridiculous.
The intersection was very powerful and you don't have the words to really go there at that time.
I grew up being the black boyfriend.
Mm, it's a thing.
I didn't even realise that was an issue until I realised that people were just boyfriends.
Right. It's like, yeah.
It's jokes.
Also, Chinese food in China.
And there were like a few girls in.
It's just food. It's just food. We're just eating food. Has that got you? Like the no northeast has got me.
Only because here, like, what's British? The full English, it is, yeah. But you still say full English. Why don't we just say full breakfast? I mean,
full breakfast.
Fuck! Okay. All right. What would your advice be for any young person or any person looking after their mental health? Which is how they feel, you know, encouragement.
Yeah.
Budding actor, potentially.
Mm. I think the thing I've learned very late in life, which I would have liked someone to impart on me earlier, is this notion of self-love. It sounds so... Again, it sounds Hallmark card, but it's really not. The only place that you can fill yourself up from is the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for fulfillment in circumstantial things, in circumstances or situations or things outside of yourself, will fill you up for so long. But if you are someone who is, you know... If you are someone who suffers a little bit with the void inside or the space that suddenly starts opening up where you do start to feel lost or anxious or depressed or low energy, then you can only go inside and you can only do things that will fill you up from there.
From a good place.
And it sounds so basic, but sometimes those things are exercise or not eating as many cookies or
which is so difficult.
Reading more.
Yes.
All the things.
Is there anything you've read recently?
Of. I'm going back to the poems. Me and poetry are having like a new love affair. So I've been reading a lot of Robert Browning recently. Brilliant. Been reading a lot of Harold Pinter's incredible poetry. I've been reading. What was I reading the other day? Dante Alighieri. Come on, that's highbrow. But
yeah.
I've just been looking for little statements, little poetic flows that just that plug me into my own experience and make me feel less alone.
Have you heard of Naimira Wahid?
Love.
Salt. You got that?
Insta is good for something, because that's where I discovered her.
Yeah, of course. Well, it is Instagram poetry.
It's Instagram poetry.
Interesting.
She's absolutely incredible.
She's the best, yeah.
Sometimes
it changed my life, actually.
Changed my life with some of her.
It's very simple.
She just plugs you in.
I know.
But sometimes the thing that you're most scared to do in a time when you're feeling low is the thing that you should do.
Always.
Sometimes I get scared to read, or I get scared to go to the cinema, because I'm too sensitive and I don't want to ingest any more, a bit like what we were talking about right at the top. But actually, sometimes that's the thing that you do need to do and engage with.
Run at the fear, yo.
Run at the fear.
It's tough.
Stop if it ouches too much.
Thank you, Zoe. I appreciate
Thank
that.
Thank you.
That is your dope. Can't wait to see the show.
Oh, I can't wait for you to see it. Right, thanks, babe.
No worries. All right, people, really appreciate you listening. So make sure that you subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Acast. If you've been affected by any of the issues in this podcast, please click the link in our bio.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Powered by Spirit Studios.